This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another very interesting show dealing with metaphysics and spiritual issues and science, of course, and some other factors that usually come into play. I thought tonight we'd talk about what kind of relationships are formed between people and sometimes animals as well, but usually between people in the higher subdimensions of existence beyond the physical one we're in right now. So what happens after you die and you want to go, don't want to go, but you end up going in either case to a higher subdimension where you're going to live in a fairly long life, longer than you lived in most circumstances while you're physically alive, and what kind of relationships do people usually have and why? I like the why thing because that gets into the science issues. And beyond that, how does this work out in terms of where people, or how, I should say, how people develop themselves and how they help to develop other people? So it's a kind of hodgepodge show because each sub-dimension has a lot of differences in the way that people live. And since we're talking about relationships, we're going to be talking about some of the intricacies of those lives. But most importantly, for people who are presently physically alive, which I assume most of you who are listening are, this is going to answer some questions for people who may not have read some of the books I've written or articles or even listened to some of the earlier shows. So this will really be kind of like an all-together explanation for people who might be wondering, well, what's going to happen when I die? And for most people, it's about relationships with others. And they are concerned as much about that as maybe anything, although some people, of course, are just concerned about whether they're going to even be conscious. Will they even exist in consciousness after physical death? And, of course, the answer is, without even any equivocation rule, yes, you will be. But some people still doubt that, and then they say, well, how does that guy know? And I'll address that again tonight. I've done it many, many times, but some people haven't heard of some of those times, so it may be worthwhile to even touch on that. So let's talk about this. When we are physically alive, time for us, the way we're living, is different than time for folks who are living in other dimensions and subdimensions of those dimensions of time and space. Now, you can say, well, how come? I mean, what, time changes? Yeah, time changes because there's a change in a thing called the quantum constant, which is related to the frequency of matter and to the indefiniteness of what we call form or matter, and the way that, therefore, those two kinds of constants somewhat interrelate. And this causes a thing called time dilation. Some people will say, well, isn't that about gravity, too? Yes, the gravity comes into play, but and gravity is much less. But these other things are more distinctly accurate, particularly if you're trying to explain it in a thing called quantum physics. If you're trying to explain it in classical physics, it'd be probably more appropriate to talk about it in terms of speed and gravity than it would be in terms of these other things I'm referring to. But it's kind of interesting because the quantum physics part of it actually is the more accurate one, and it actually explains some things that the gravity side doesn't really address. So it's better to probably pursue it from a more, we'll say, accurate science. Now, you might say, okay, you're going to get into that quantum physics stuff. I'm going to sleep. No, I'm not going to talk much about it right now, and I will only touch on it a little bit more later in the show. But I have had shows where I've extensively talked about that, but I don't want to put you all to sleep tonight. So I mean, after all, it's July. You know, it's warm outside. People are a little tired by this time. You know, yeah, I got it. So we're gonna make this interesting and upbeat and about things that are relevant to, you know, everybody's existence rather than just answering some deep philosophical and scientific mathematical kinds of questions. All right, so then if time is different, and it is, in what way? And the way to explain this is that there is a lot more time that people can live within in comparison to people who are living in the physical world. So a year here can be as much, if we're going to the next major dimension of time and space, which is called the astral dimension, and to the most dilated part of that dimension where the frequency is much higher and the quantum constant is much greater, that is about 24 times greater than here. So 1 minute here is like 24 minutes there. An hour here is like a whole day, 24 hours there. That's a huge difference, obviously. And, of course, in perspective, that means, since folks are living in this dilated state, we are moving very slowly, and they're moving very quickly in relationship to each other. We don't notice this because we can't see them. Interestingly, to some small extent, they can actually see us or can sense us in some circumstances. So this is not so unusual in most people's minds who believe in life after death. They think the people who are alive in the other dimensions or sub-dimensions have some ability to sense us, and they do. And sometimes they also communicate with us. It's difficult, though, because the communication isn't just across distance. It's across time, and that makes it much more complicated to be able to communicate when your time is not the same as somebody else's. It confuses things considerably, and it's not an easy thing to do. That's why all around us we're not having conversations with all the dead folks in the other subdimensions because of this great difficulty. And there are other reasons, too, but I'm making it into the most simplistic so that you can grasp it in the easiest way possible. Okay, so they have trouble communicating. We have even more trouble trying to communicate, in a sense, with them. But the best way for us to understand relationships is that if you have a lot more time to live in, that changes the nature of what we consider to be normal relationships where we're from, you know, in this dimension. And so it is a considerable difference to say, like, as an example, you're going to be married to somebody. Oh, it's a marriage for life. But if your life is 600 years to it, that might have some effect on that concept. Not for everybody. Some people say 600 years is just fine. It's cool. Yeah. But other folks might say, you know, that maybe wasn't the original idea of their concept of what a marriage is in terms of time. So there are differences there. Now, the funny thing about this is, that part of the equation that's used in this whole thing has to do with thought and consciousness. Consciousness is part of thought. And so when we are defining the time differences and the subplane differences of these dimensions, it's really divided up by the consciousness of the beings that are there. The highest consciousness beings create the greatest level of dilation of time between themselves and us. And because of that, they live a lot more of their life within the same period of time than people with lower consciousness in lower dimensions of time and space. It's a kind of interesting thing, isn't it? So thought is a huge aspect to the creation of one's existence. As a matter of fact, the best way to define our own existence is that it is based upon how we think. And our consciousness being part of our thought is therefore a defining element, a quality to our very nature of existence. And it really, how we create ourselves is so based upon that it's remarkably obvious once you get to the other side. Now, this is where I bring in a little story about myself. I spent some time, actually probably more than most, in an isolation tank of unusual nature that was a true or as close to true zero-gravity kind of tank as you could get, built for scientific study more than just for people floating around. And because of that, I had a number of out-of-body experiences at a time when my consciousness was not very high. Usually people can't get to other dimensions of time and space where they're physically alive, unless their consciousness is very high or they have a strong will and are willing to do whatever they need to do to achieve the results. But still, I had the more or less somewhat, I won't call it unique, but we'll say limited, unusual experience of being able to go to some of these subdimensions and lower consciousness, and then as I kind of developed my consciousness more to whatever level you want to believe it might be at, I got to go to some higher places. So I got to see the full or most of the full realm of the differences in dilation of time and the way relationships change. And this gave me a perspective. It also taught me, along with some studying of physics and other things, how the physics works, because I was interested in that element, and I got to actually do some experiments and be part of the experiments in my own consciousness to see how it affects the time and space around me. This was a grand tour and experience for me that allowed some formation of a lot of the information that I talk about on the show. This is was then, we'll say, enhanced when I no longer needed to use an isolation tank to achieve some of the similar results, sometimes better because the isolation tank in itself is somewhat of a barrier. And so it actually produced even better results by not having to use it. And so over time, we're talking about way over a decade, it was possible to gain quite a bit of information, which we're going to be talking about tonight. So when you ask, well, how does he know about that? Well, it's really based as much on experience and also learning things and studying things in terms of modern physics and also things about metaphysics and things about spiritual issues and finding that there is a God through this whole experience, that it really changed me. It made me into a different person. I hope a more virtuous person. No, I don't walk on water, and far from perfection, but definitely better than I was, say, 30 years ago, which, you know, that's a good thing. 30 years, I made a lot of progress, and actually, my first experience in this whole environment, if you really go back in time, which was closer to 35 years ago, 34 years ago, that's a long time. So that's quite a change over time, but still a lot of time in terms of our time here. So you could say, okay, then what's the deal with people and how do they relate to each other? What happens when you die? And is it true that all your friends, neighbors, relatives, and everybody else comes and greets you, and, you know, and the lights and whatever, and you go through a tunnel or something, and you're there, and you're suddenly there, and bingo, bango, and whatever. Well, some of that's all true, and I don't want you to think that those experiences are anything other than valid, not just for the people who have them, but consistently so. There are some variances. Depends on where you're going, too, as they say, and what your consciousness is before you get there. And there's another element. The next full dimension of time and space from the etheric physical or electromagnetic physical, the one we're in right now, is called the astral. Some people call it the emotional. It's not as accurate a word, but it certainly defines for a lot of people what it's about. And when you go to these other dimensions, you can only meet people, folks, that are still there after their death from the physical world, because there's another major dimension after the subdimensions of the astral that people go to, and it's usually about 30 to 50 years or so of our time here that people move on. Now, the interesting thing about this is there are exceptions. There's some people that only stay a few years of our time here. I mean, those are real rare exceptions. And then there's some people that actually go beyond the 50-year status. Those are real rare, too. So it's sort of like a bell-shaped curve. Both sides of it are extremely small percentages with the majority in the middle. And the majority is probably in the 30 to 40 year range or so. It's where most folks go and stay there. Now, why do you leave? Because your astral body, just like your physical body did here, eventually wears out. Mostly because people are not living a perfectly virtuous life. And it just, you retain some energies because of selfishness, and eventually the senses go, the bodies go, and it's time to move on. So if you expect to meet your great-great-grandmother or father by going to the next dimension after your physical death, that's not going to happen, because they would have left the astral world a long time ago. The same thing for people historically who lived a long time ago. You're not going to meet them either, because they've moved on. Some of them have come back and reincarnated a number of times, so it's not even like they're anywhere to be found in these higher subdimensions in certain circumstances. Some are back into being their soul, which is the place where we're all headed back to. So it's kind of a hodgepodge of different circumstances. But the majority of folks are people that lived in the physical world in the last 30 to 50 years or so. Vast majority, with some exceptions on either side. So if you think about that, you can kind of immediately pinpoint, if you're near death or if you are about to die, who you're likely to meet. Because you can say, well, it's going to be someone in the last 30, 50 years who also died. Yeah, okay, got that. And it's, how else is it subdivided? Well, it's divided by consciousness. Those seven subdimensions, there's actually kind of an eighth that's artificially created by the dark side of life, you know, the evil ones. Yeah, but let's leave them out of the picture for right now. So we'll call it seven subdimensions. And those seven subdimensions are actually divided up by consciousness. So if you're kind of a lower consciousness person and you happen to be looking for somebody who is pretty high in consciousness, at least when they died, and if they maintain that or grown, when you get to the astral world, you may not find them because they're going to be in a higher subdimension than where you are. They could find you if they want to, and they could even travel to visit you. But you're not going to be able to do the same in reverse because your consciousness isn't high enough to not fall asleep, literally, by a lack of sense when you get to a higher dimension than where your consciousness can maintain itself. You become subconscious and eventually unconscious when you move, as you're moving towards these higher subdimensions. And by the time you get there, you're just either asleep or about to fall asleep. Maybe see a second or two or something, and then you're gone. And so that's the limitation. And the ability to, therefore, meet and greet some people that you would love to meet just because you're interested in them, but they may be much higher consciousness, will be impossible unless they're willing to come to you, because they can maintain their higher consciousness, for the most part, in the lower subdimensions, where people with lower consciousness might be, if your consciousness is lower. If you have higher consciousness, you're going to go to one of the higher dimensions, but then it's unlikely that you're going to at least immediately visit people who have lower consciousness. Now, you could choose to do that, and some people do, but not immediately. So the people that you expect to meet fairly soon after arriving in the next dimension of time and space, bigger dimension, and the subdimensions you end up in, are going to be the folks that you have a shared consciousness with in most circumstances. That's the whole point I was getting to. Now, that doesn't, for most people, that's not even a problem, because most folks are friends with, and particularly close friends with, and also family members with, people who are similar in consciousness to themselves. So, oddly, they may not even realize there are other subdimensions. Although that depends on where they are and how much they want to know about where they are. So if you really want to know more about the subdimension you're living on, it's likely you're going to recognize that there are visitors from other higher subdimensions, and that would kind of change your idea of the whole place. Very interesting stuff. Now, a lot of folks want to know about romantic issues, and I think I'll cover that first. Because that's kind of like, all right, tell me about, you know, am I going to be with my soulmate, my partner, whatever, from this life. Let's say they just died or about to die, and are going on over there. Well, if you die close enough together, usually people continue their relationship in the next subdimension of the astral world together. Yeah, it's common. Now, how close is close? A couple of years, usually, in physical time. It usually almost guarantees that. But not always, because if you're in a dilated situation where it's 12 or 15 times greater, and that's those two are actual close to numbers of the subdimensions, the results are fairly, you know, dramatic, because 15 times times 2, that would be 30 years. Well, you think about that, and you say, well, the person who's over there in the astral world, even though it's been a couple of years for the person who dies from here, that go meet that other person, they've been living 30 years over there. Odds are they might be with somebody else, or maybe their feelings have changed about being in a relationship with you. So you can see that this has some significant consequences. The time and space are separators, not just in dimensionality, but in relationship as well. Now, I know some people are going to get upset hearing me say that, particularly those who have loved ones that may be dying right now or recently have, and they're concerned about this very issue. And now I'm giving them some bad news. Now, I don't want you to consider the option of saying, well, solution is, as soon as they kick the bucket, I'll just go kill myself. I'm going to tell you the problem with that. And I'm also going to ask you to consider not doing that for other reasons besides the problem. But let's start with the problem to begin with. Okay. You have a close, loving relationship with someone. And they die. And you say to yourself, well, look, where's that gun? Where's the jump off a cliff? Whatever. And just kill myself. Then I can go be with them, and I don't have an interest in really staying around here anymore. The problem with that is that it is such a selfish act to kill yourself from this dimension. And I'll go into the reasons why it's selfish later, or a few minutes from now. But it's such a selfish act that you run the high risk of, unless the other person killed themselves as well, you're the person you're in a relationship with, this may not apply then. But if they didn't, let's say they died from natural causes or for whatever reason, that you won't, most likely, you'll bump down the dimension, the subdimension, you're actually going to end up living in. And the two of you are going to have a hard time living together, even in the astral world, because you're not going to be in the same sun dimensions. Sure, the other person could come down a little with you, but, you know, that may not happen because people won't give up their consciousness that easily to just be with someone. It can happen, but it's not that common. So it's maybe a fruitless gesture and a silly one and a selfish one. Now, why is it selfish? Okay. We come here as a journey from our soul to create more virtue in the physical world. This is the hardest place to do it. It's a great sacrifice. And if we choose to kill ourselves for some reason of a relationship or any other reason for that matter that is strictly for ourselves, we're giving up the opportunity to be creative of virtue. Sometimes it's very tough to do it here, but it's the reason, the first reason we come here. And that's why it's so selfish. So killing yourself is a really bad option. Now, you could say, well, what if I want to kill myself because I'm going to die next week anyway? Well, that's a whole different issue. That's a week isn't going to change that much, but you probably won't leave the etheric realm, the electromagnetic, until a certain time anyway. You could get stuck there for a while. So there's all kinds of problems about choosing to kill yourself in any circumstances. It's the original reason that suicide was actually frowned upon long before there was recorded history. Now, most of the reasons today have to do with religious reasons, which may or may not have anything to do with the truth. But it may have to do with political reasons, and there may be legal reasons because certain laws have been made against it, etc. But still, still it's a different issue, different thing to talk about. And it's not exactly on our subject for tonight. So anyway, that's a big issue, though. And we should always consider that we're here to do the best we can with the limited time that we are here. And it's a relatively short time compared to our lives as they will be in the other dimensions. All right. So if someone dies pretty close to the time that someone else does, that they're in a close relationship with, their chances of being together aren't too bad. But pretty close is really more in terms, in my opinion, of months than years. I said 2 years, but that's really stretching because that could be easily 30 and in some cases 50, 60 years, which is just unreasonably reasonable to expect that you're still going to be able to have that relationship open to you. Now, if it's within a few months, that's a lot more likely because let's say it's 3 months. And let's say you're in a time dilation of 3, that'd be 45 months. Well, that's less than 4 years. People have been easily known to wait 4 years to have a relationship with somebody. And the good news is that those relationships have the potential to last much longer than they did while you're physically alive. A relationship while someone's physically alive is considered a long time if it's 40 or 50 years, right? Very long for some people. And in these other dimensions, it's possible to have a relationship for many hundreds of years with someone else. So that has a big change in the nature of the relationship that people experience. One of the things that happens, and relationships are great for this reason, when people are together here and they go on to the astral world, is they usually support each other in a more formidable and quickened state of growth that is lacking if they go there on an individual basis. So going there with a relationship that you've formed here and that you established there again, it gives many people an advantage in keeping their consciousness growing more quickly than those who don't do that. And the reason for that has to do with the need for a person to not only experience their own growth, but the growth of the person they're in love with or they're very close to. Now, in some cases, when I talk about close relationships, it could be a father and a daughter, or a mother and a daughter, or a son, and that kind of thing. So you can still have that happen. And that's even more unique because in the lower subworlds of the astral world, children grow up more slowly. You might say, why is that? Well, they need that also means they need more parenting, in a sense. The reason for it is that there's less stress, there's less pathos. Life is a bit easier. But also, that makes, for those folks, less of a challenge. And if their consciousness isn't significantly high, they don't grow as much. Now, for people of children of higher consciousness, those folks actually can grow even faster than normal because they're self-motivated and they don't care about the environmental challenges being necessary for them to grow. They make their own challenges on themselves and oftentimes serve in lower dimensions of time and space, give up certain, sacrifice certain elements of life to create more light and to be more in contact with God. It's a really different kind of existence for those children. And so the parents of those children are parenting much less time. And you might say, well, then do they not stay close or whatever? Actually, their children very quickly become adults. And then they oftentimes are co-servers together, especially on what are called the spiritual two subworlds of the astral world. Which is a great thing because you have the extended families of people who are spiritual servers and do great things. And they form kind of like a major like group of people that has some familiarity to them. Not always because they sometimes have people that are not familiarly connected but who just became friends and they adopt a much closer relationship because of this growing together thing. So there's a great deal of difference, a greater variety in the ways that people have friends and relationships and what they're based upon. In the lower dimensions, it's oftentimes based upon experience and imagination and the ability to, we'll say, sense emotionally. Whereas in the higher subdimensions, particularly the two spiritual highest ones, relationships are much more based upon co-creation of virtue and being closer to their creator or God. And it's a big deal in terms of the way the people turn out. Those relationships in the higher subdimensions produce some incredible kinds of folks. Not too many of them, because they're more the exception than the rule, but still a lot of people that are doing some very great work in their dimension of time and space. And oftentimes they serve in the lower subdimensions where they don't gain the advantage of the time-space dilation because they give it up to serve others that are less conscious than them. It's a pretty amazing lifestyle. People in the lower subdimensions may grow to some extent in consciousness. They automatically usually raise their consciousness just by going to these subdimensions, partly because life is easier, there's less stress, but also because it's easier to think, and life itself has a much easier aspect to it. Literally, things take place as you creatively imagine them to. That's pretty good. Wow, imagine something and it just happens. Wow. Because the energy follows thought many, many thousands of times greater than it does here in the physical world. Again, that's a thing called the quantum constant change that causes that effect. So, in looking at how this whole thing fits together, we can say that people who are, well, going to maintain or try to maintain a relationship, either with family or friends or lovers, have more options as they develop more consciousness before and after their physical death, and have usually longer relationships that can last considerably longer than they do while they were physically alive. But because in the lower realms, people do have, we'll say, a tendency to become bored because they're not as creative in general. They're certainly not creative of light, which sustains creation. Then the results are that in their boredom and fatigue, they may leave a relationship after decades or even 100 years of time, saying, well, that was long enough for me, and it was way longer than I had as a relationship in the physical world, and go on to try to be in the similar kind of romantic relationship or sometimes in other kinds of relationships, friends of sorts, with others at different times, much as you might see in the physical world, but in a much shorter period of time. This is the, we'll say, the hallmark difference between the higher spiritual subplanes and the lower ones of the astral world. There are parts of the astral world, the sixth and seventh subworlds, where relationships seldom last even as long as they do here in the physical world. And so, for those reasons, you can't make the assumption that everything's going to be just wonderful and very angelic kind of things would take place just because it's in the astral world. Now, the odd thing about this is, I said we're not going to talk much about the dark side of existence, but the real evil ones sometimes form relationships for very long periods of time. Now, their whole purpose in doing that is because they're seeking power, and they can maintain strong amounts of power over folks that aren't living in their dark dimension, called the eighth sphere, by keeping fairly tight relationships with certain people, evil people, that they have formed bonds with for the sake of manipulation, control, and power. Very negative kind of existence. But they do sometimes maintain long periods, I mean like thousands of years, of a relationship in evil. Doesn't sound very appetizing to me, but for some folks, that's just what they're looking for. And of course, it's available to them if that's what they choose. So that's another kind of strange, oddball exception to what we've been talking about. All right, what about with pets? I mean, in the astral world. I mean, let's say that you had a dog that you really felt really close to, and it was like 10 years ago. And since the dog died, lived for 10 years and died, and it's been gone for 10 years. Well, there's a chance that you might be able to at least meet that dog again. I'm just using this as an example. But usually animals don't live much longer in the astral world than they've lived while they're physically alive, unless they're, again, in the spiritual subplanes, which is the first and second subplanes of the astral world. There they have a life that's more like a human life and can live very long periods of time, like hundreds of years. Quite a difference, obviously. But in the subplanes that aren't spiritual, they might live at most double or triple the lifetime that they live here, and on average, they don't live any longer. And so, your chances of meeting, if you died, say, your chances of meeting that animal when you die is very slim. And the other thing is, let's say the animal died 5 years ago. Well, you say, well, they should still be alive in the subworld. But you don't say you're going to the same subworld they're on, because there's oftentimes that's what happens. Animals adopt the same consciousness we have. You still might have a problem because that animal may have become very attached to an indigenous resident upon arriving in the astral world. They get adopted, best way to describe it. And their allegiance and closeness to that person or family, usually it's more than one person, is so great that at most they might appear for a very brief time, sort of as a hello when you arrive. But anything more than that should not be even close to being expected and unlikely to occur. So, unfortunately, our closeness with our animals is very short-lived, unless the animal dies very close to the time we do while we're physically alive. Then, of course, it could literally accompany us on their journey of life in the astral world while we live there. But that's the exception and not the rule. Many people have many pets throughout a lifetime in the physical world. Most of them go on to live with others in the astral world. And they're pretty okay with that. They may miss us for a short time, but they're able to adapt better than humans are to that condition. They accept it a little or a lot easier. It's not that they didn't love us. It's that they can and have an easier capacity to love others, especially if the others have similar consciousness, and they exchange love together, we'll say, through their consciousness, because consciousness comes from loving. So it works out for them pretty well. As I said, sometimes, oftentimes, better than it does for human beings. So it's just the way it should be, in my opinion. And I certainly don't have any bad feelings about it. And I think that it's probably a very good thing. Well, anyway, we're running out of time in this section. So when we come back, I'll go into a lot of other details, a lot of other thoughts. We haven't even come close to talking about the mental world, which is a whole different ballgame. I'm going to get into that. But right now, we're talking about the astral world and the astral subworld, I should say, and how those are different, of course, from here. And I'll cover a lot of more salient issues when we come back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about relationships after physical death in the higher subdimensions of time and space. So it's a kind of a mouthful. I think the next area that I want to explore and talk about is how can people maintain a much longer and more enriching relationship, assuming they want to, in the next dimension of time and space, and even the one after that, which is called the mental subdimensions. So let's talk about that. And there's a very simple answer, but it ties into what I was talking about earlier. But I'll be more succinct and talk about how it makes the difference. And that is through spiritual service. If a person is spiritually serving while they're physically alive, and they're doing so in a co-serving way with others, the chances of them staying together and continuing that process in the next dimension of time and space are pretty high. And the reason for that is that co-service requires some equality or similarity in consciousness to do so. And since that is one of the issues that comes into play, then when you were, if you die around or in similar time periods to each other, you will then be able to co-serve together because you'll be on the same subplane, and you'll have a similar, we'll say, mission in what you're going to be doing in your virtuous service in the astral subdimension you go beyond. This is particularly true if you end up going to the one of the two spiritual subdimensions, which is the first and second subworlds. So that's a big deal, because for a lot of people, they want that. Now, some of people that want that are quote-unquote lovers and close in all kinds of different ways. And I get asked this question sometimes frequently, well, what are the chances of doing that? And I say, well, it's no different than people who aren't lovers in some sense, because as long as you're co-serving together, you have that opportunity. So, but if you want to have, we'll say, a very long life together in the next subdimension, having a sexual relationship together will encourage that to take place. And you're going to say, oh, come on, what does the sex got to do with anything? Well, it has a lot to do with it, because sex is actually a sacred thing. Most people don't understand that. If you are loving each other in a sexual way, your senses are becoming joined together. As your senses become joined together, your ability to serve together becomes enhanced significantly, and because less time and space is wasted in any activity when the senses are joined. And if they're joined between two people, that really increases or enhances their service. And so this is the foundation of what some people refer to as sexual yoga, but it also is the foundation of living spiritually for people who are also lovers and monogamously sexually connected. Now, if you're not monogamous, then you destroy that advantage that I told you about in a significant way, because you can only attune and fuse together your senses with one another person. If you try to do it with two people or five, you're just subtracting as much as you're adding, or sometimes more so, and so the reduction in sense and then in consciousness follows. So consciousness grows when people are monogamous, and it decreases when they're not. Okay, got that all down. It's not a moral thing. I'm not telling you that, you know, like, it's in the Bible and that's the reason you should do it or something like that. It may be. And maybe it was in the Bible for this very reason I just told you, but other people attributed other characteristics to it. And so it's a very interesting thing. And then it depends what Bible we're talking about, of course. So, I mean, there's all kinds of interesting elements to the concept of a romantic relationship. Now, some people say, what about those, you know, what if you're a quote-unquote soulmate? Okay, we've heard that word probably overused in the last 30 or 40 years or so. Now, the point of this issue is that a soulmate to me may be something different than what it is to you out there. But to me, a soulmate means that you came here with the intention to co-serve spiritually with the person that we're calling the soulmate. And that person then would remain so, if you did so while you were physically alive, going on to the higher subdimensions of time and space. And that's what I think of. Now, other people may have a completely different definition with different answers to this whole issue. So this is really a fascinating idea, because now we have another element that this was planned out ahead of time. And those are rare plans, by the way. That isn't common, because many times the soul has like only a type of person that someone might be good for someone else, not a specific. If you have a very specific, then you have a lot of karmic issues. You probably have served together before. There's all kinds of things. And if you do find that person, and that person and you actually create a lot of virtue while you're physically alive, you can pretty much count on being with that person then on into the at least astral subdimensions, and sometimes into the mental ones as well, which we'll cover later. So this is I think it's an important element. Some people are very fanatic about it and insist that whoever they're with is their soulmate. Remember this statement. You can't be a soulmate with somebody if you aren't living as a soul, and souls live to serve others. So if that's what you're doing, and when I say others, I don't mean the other person. I'm talking about others being plural. If you're actually doing that with your mate, then you may really be a soulmate. And then I commend you. But if you're not, you're probably more into fantasy about it. And you're not with a soulmate, you're with somebody that you care a lot for, and you may love them, and you're close with them. Those are all great things, and I don't want to diminish them, but they wouldn't fit my definition of a soulmate. They might fit yours, so that's okay. You don't have to think the way I think. But I'm giving you the rationale of why I think the way I think. So the chances of being together with someone who is not your soulmate is significantly less than someone who is. And the way to almost guarantee it is to be serving for a long period of time at very high levels of service with a person here. And then that's going to continue on with you into the other dimensions of time and space. And you notice I keep saying person. Technically speaking, this sexual issue works only for heterosexual people. Homosexual people certainly can be co-servers together. But they have one problem, and this is their problem. And I've talked about this, and some people think I'm anti homosexuals because I say this, but it's a scientific issue and has nothing to do with my feelings about heterosexual, homosexual, or any sexual people. That's just part of their existence. It's not all the things that make them up to be a person. And the point is this, as I said earlier, when you have sex with someone who is of the opposite sex, you can join your senses together. It has to do with the way the energies move back and forth and so on. If you have sex with someone who is of the same sex, you diminish their identity of self to some extent when you're having the sex itself, only during that period of time, though. But the problem is that it doesn't join the senses together. So you don't enhance your senses, and to some extent you diminish them. Maybe only a small amount, but it's still a fact. The more important thing is that you're not really increasing them any amount or any significant amount. And the result is going to be that you're not going to have the same benefits that a heterosexual couple would have in comparison. And you wouldn't be able to get to the same level of co-service together. This affects people mostly if they're really advanced in what is called an initiatory process, because they wouldn't be able to finish the initiatory process because it would constantly interfere with it. But other than that, you could create just about as much virtue as anybody else. It's just with more difficulty and effort. And the object in service is to try to make it effortless rather than to increase the effort, because effortless service is more successful and more helpful to others. So that's where the problem comes in. Does that mean that you're condemned in some terrible sense and you're going to live in hell or whatever? No. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to have a close relationship with somebody. No, you can have a close relationship. They're harder to maintain on a constant level for long periods of time. So homosexual relationships on the inner planes, especially the sub-worlds where they're more consistently found, which is usually fifth, sixth, and seventh sub-worlds, those sub-worlds have a problem in that because the sexuality doesn't lead to increased closeness, the relationships that people have that have sexuality in them, even though they may really love each other, may not last quite as long or even near as long as someone who is heterosexual in all other things being equal. So there may be a decrease in the longevity for those folks because of the science of the energy moving between back and forth between them and what it's doing to their senses. Interesting thought. And, of course, in the physical world, the same is true. We don't notice it as much here because people don't even stay together very long here. But it could be noticeable more over longer periods of time, decades. And for the people who are homosexual, who have been together for decades, they may understand even better than what I am saying by their own experience the difficulties that are encountered in maintaining a relationship with someone for that long, where there's a lot of sexual connection between them, and they also have many other issues, loving issues between them. And hopefully, if they're serving, that would be the keynote of their discovery of what I'm trying to explain. At any rate, how many people are in that category? I don't know. But the point is that I think it is discoverable even for people who don't necessarily listen to anything I've said or read anything I've said or anybody else has said, because I'm not the first person to be talking about this. It's in a number of different metaphysical sources. Sometimes it's not very well explained, though. And so it's more like an edict or just a statement of fact, like, And then a lot of people have gotten upset. Well, all those metaphysicists are, well, you know, homophobes or anti-homosexual or whatever. You know, as long as they're basing it upon what I'm explaining it as, then I would consider it not a prejudice as much as a statement of fact. And one are trying to be helpful rather than hurtful to those folks. So this is a kind of interesting thing. You might ask, well, how many people are homosexual if you go to the astral subworld? And the answer is not quite as many as are here in the physical world. On an average, if you go to the astral subworlds, but if you go to the sixth and seventh astral subworlds, it's actually more than here. So it really depends, in a proportional sense, to the population. It really depends where you go. Some places more than others, some people less. It's really a matter of where you're going to. Again, it has to do with this forces issue, creating forces between people and within people's centers, and how that affects their choices of who to be with. So that's the reason that it works out that way. All right, so let's talk about then people who go to the astral subworld and are seeking just to have a good old time. You know, oh, I just want to have some fun, I want to relax, hey, get a bit of this physical efforts and everything and live a really cool life. What about those folks? Because I've been talking a lot about, of course, my chosen thing to talk about is virtue and creating virtue. But what about the folks that just want to go there and hang out, live their life, and have a good life? Well, again, their consciousness and selfishness will determine what subworld they're going to be in. And they're still going to live likely longer in their time there than they ever lived while they were physically alive. Now, there's no guarantee of that, but in most cases, that's a true statement. And they also may have a much easier, less stressful life, and one in which their relationships with people are easier to maintain, but not necessarily any closer, even though they have stronger ability to be empathic, if they are going there to have a good time, because that's a relatively selfish position in some respects, they're going to split their senses and lose empathy rather than gain it. And so in their living a kind of life based upon senses and excitement and experiences and emotional feelings, those kinds of lives have a much more indefiniteness to the longer-term aspect of relationship. So their relationships are choppy. They may have intense relationships for relatively short periods of time, no longer and maybe shorter than they have while they're physically alive, and then have a lot of distance in their relationships with the people they used to have more intensity with. And they may not be able to maintain relationships even any longer than they did while they were physically alive. This is particularly true on the sixth and seventh subworlds. Less so on the fifth, and not so really on the fourth or the third, and virtually not at all on the first or second subworlds. So you get a lot of these changes that really, depending upon consciousness, where people are going to, how they're going to experience the relationships. I think we've got a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yeah, Niles. I'm here. Herb Lubitz calling. I have two questions.
All right, Herb. How you doing?
Okay, for an old man. How about yourself?
Okay, for a guy who's old but getting younger. Okay, so what's going on? Let's find two questions.
One. Yeah. The idea that passing on to the astral world, that you might live for 1,000 years, 1,000 astral years, seems like a boring situation. I mean, it's something somebody normally wouldn't look forward to. It's an awful long time to be hanging around, so to speak.
Well, Herb, you probably know this as well as anybody. 1,000 years is still a very long time in the astral world time. And that's quite so long in mental world time, but that's unusual, because people who usually could live 1,000 years may cut that short by a couple hundred, because they're serving usually in the first or second subworld, and part of that time they're going to lower subworlds in their service, especially people who are in the first subworld are doing.
Well, even 500, let's take 500 years. I don't think
500 is much more likely. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about that. What happens to most people if they're doing 500 years is they're spending an awful lot of time being far more creative than they ever were while they were physically alive. And the creation has a totally different effect. And really what you're doing is you're moving into the next part of my show, which is great. I mean, your question came in right at the perfect time because that's what I was going to get into. But so people actually start living this accelerated creative element to their life. We think that we're creative while we live physically. We're really not. We're kind of almost like rocks here. We barely create much of anything for most people. And this is not to insult anybody. We're all doing this. We're kind of just poking around and not really doing a lot of creativity. There's some great creators. There are. But most people aren't. And so when you get into the higher astral subworlds from the fourth and up, people tend to live much more creatively. And sometimes the creation is more personal, like it is in the fourth subworld, or it's very impersonal, such as in the first or second subworlds. And regardless, this accelerated creativity makes time go by much faster. So that to them, although they're living 500 years, or 6 or 7, the results are that they have this incredible experience in life that they weren't having while they were physically alive. And it changes the relationship of their perspective of a thing called self. You know, you understand it probably as much as anybody.
Right.
The self in relationship to time and space. As the self becomes more creative, time becomes something that it is not concerned about because it's using the time to create. And it's creating, every time it creates something, that involves anyone else or anything else, it's also creating more of itself. So the self gets bigger. As the self gets bigger, its perspective of time changes. And instead of time going slowly for that person, it actually goes by very quickly. Let me give you, and the Greeks knew about this. It's called kairotic time. We know this to be true. What I just told you, I think everybody who's listening knows this to be true. And that is that if you're doing something that you're really creative in, the time doesn't seem to bother you no matter how much time you spend doing it. I mean, you can literally not even sleep sometimes, but you're doing this creative thing, whatever it is, and you just focused on it, and then when you're done doing it, you don't feel that you were bored, and you don't feel as though time was a drag on you. You feel the opposite, that the time went by so fast that you're more encouraged to do even more the next time.
You don't watch the clock. In other words.
That's right. That's a person who's being creative, and we all have done this at some time in our life.
Right.
It's just that when you get to the astral world, you do it even more if you're in those higher subworlds from the fourth up. For the people on the fifth, sixth, and seventh, you do have a point, because on the fifth, what people experience is sometimes a kind of tedium, and boredom. And that's part of the experience of them not being willing to be as creative as they could be. And they're kind of creating a lot of forces in themselves against their self-growing. And so their self continues to stay similar or even sometimes contract as a result of this reluctance to be creative. They oftentimes are still very afraid of existing life itself and selfish at the same time. And so they do suffer. Whereas if you go to the sixth subworld, let me give you an example of that, people substitute excitement and frenzy, in other words, movement, because the whole astral world is a place of the added dimension to it is that of movement itself. So they substitute this added dimension of movement for creativity, and the result is that at the end of their experiences, they could be a few days, a month, a day, whatever, an hour even, during the experience, they're not bothered at all. They don't have the tedium of the people on the fifth subworld, but afterwards they have a sense of loss of self, and it creates kind of a depressed state. This is what builds up a thing called glamour, and so then they go in and almost habitually do something even more frenetic and more movement-related to try to get out of the tedious boredom that they sense, the depression that they sense, from not having been creative. So each reflective period of time is a time of really negative feelings for them, especially on the sixth, in the sixth subworld. And on the seventh, they actually experience a loss, a serious loss of sense, that usually goes along with a sense of depression. The sense loss is more slow on the sixth subworld, but it too, over time, becomes dangerous towards their existence, and they don't live as long either. So here, you know, when we look at relationships, you can see how this is going to have a dramatic effect on how people relate to each other and how they form and how long those relationships are, and the meaning of those relationships totally changes based upon the consciousness of the person. It's all dictating this, which is further dictating the nature of the physics of the subworld that they're on. That subworld is not creating the problem for them or the existence. They actually are creating the subworld. They're making, it's the collective consciousness of the people who live there who actually change the physics of the subworld to be what it is. So I hope that answered that question. You have another question.
Another point, a question. Sexual relationships in the astral world. We don't have any bodies, physical bodies. How can you have a sexual relation?
Because the astral body to a person in the astral world is not much different than the physical. You sense everything almost the same. The only thing you don't sense is matter. But you can sense the energy as though it were matter, and you can feel very much the same kind of feelings. Some things are more intense and some things are less intense than they are while you're physically alive. The most dense kinds of sensations are missing because matter is what gives those senses the feeling that they have.
Right.
But so you don't feel, let me give